The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. More than 30 years ago, in August 1991 to be precise, a group of weed activists and freedom lovers gathered in Volunteer Park in Seattle, Washington for the Washington Hemp Expo. From these modest beginnings grew the largest protest festival in the world, Seattle Hempfest. I had the pleasure of going to Hempfest many times over the years. It was an incredible experience. So many bands, so many speakers, so very, very many people. Huge crowds of people. The last time Hempfest was held outdoors in Seattle was August 2019. Thousands upon thousands of attendees made their way to parks along the waterfront to celebrate marijuana legalization. Now, putting the thing on had already become a major logistical and financial hassle, and then came COVID. Organizers put on a virtual event in 2020 with music and even some panel discussions, and that was the last one. There had been hopes of reviving Hempfest in 2024, but that sadly didn't happen. Well, I got to reminiscing this week, as you do, you know, look through a bunch of old pictures, and so many fond memories. One year in particular, always probably be my favorite, definitely a standout, was 2013. Washington State, along with Colorado, voted in 2012 to legalize and regulate the adult-use marijuana market, and that's when marijuana legalization really took off. As a result, the 2013 Hempfest was a real landmark, the very first Hempfest at a time of legalization. I was listening to some of the audio that I got that year, and I found an interview that I didn't get a chance to air back then. Ben Livingston is, well, I mean, he's a genius. A software engineer, former weed journalist, he's an activist, a leader in the medical marijuana movement and in the legalization movement. Well, back in 2013, we sat down together at Seattle Hempfest and recorded an interview. It is one of the best interviews I've done. We were relaxed, having a great conversation. Ben is absolutely brilliant. So today on Century, we're going to hear an interview from the archives, a previously unaired conversation between myself and Seattle activist Ben Livingston, recorded at Seattle Hempfest in August 2013, less than a year after the people of Washington changed the world by voting to legalize marijuana. From Seattle, Washington, this is Doug McVeigh at the Hempfest. We're at the Liberty Garden. I'm with my friend Ben Livingston, and we are... I'll find it. And we are at the legal adult use area. This is an actual open-air smoking area. There's hamburger bar, there's ice cream. As my friend Ben was pointing out, there's a hash bar about 20 feet away. With people doing, I think they're called dabs. Is that what they're called?
Doing oil, hash oil, which is the new thing the kids are into these days. Which, let's talk about that. I feel like one, we got all these hash oil pens, right, which are very functionally useful. Like they're very easy to use. They don't smell as quite like cannabis. They're discreet. I kind of wonder if it's a good thing that to get these. Benefits like the convenience, the discretion. People have to basically consume the strongest cannabis they possibly can, like the strongest concoction they possibly can. Like we're out here smoking a joint out in front of the hash oil bar, right? Like we are basically like we are in the Amish carriage next to the fast lane with the Lamborghinis and stuff, right? Like we're just like you know, putzing along.
Personally, I like a horse and buggy. I ride a bicycle, you know.
Yeah, right? As long as it doesn't have a motor. Like, man, as long as it hasn't been concentrated.
Well, yeah, I am. I'm old school. And I prefer the nice, mellow, gentle buzz.
I feel like it's good, again, that there's a place for us on the radio, on the internet. For our conversation, there's more and more a place for us, especially as cannabis legalization advocates. But more specifically, I feel like it's great that there's a place for us as cannabis consumers to actually consume cannabis at an event like this, the Seattle Hemp Fest. You know, they finally got after 20 how many years? Man, I don't even know. 20 years? Oh, who's counting? After that many years. It's not like people weren't consuming cannabis in those prior years, right? But that was civil disobedience, right? And so here's a place where I'm actually not civilly disobeying our cannabis laws, yet I am consuming cannabis in my city park. I think that is such a lovely thing. It's such a lovely mind shift coming from a drug war mentality, right? Like, I feel like there's jackbooted thugs out there that'll come and take your stuff and kick in your door for this plant that the universe gave you that you think is beneficial and medicinal and spiritual and all these things. Like, you know, coming from that sort of mentality and seeing, you know, a lot of people have trouble, go to court, go to jail, go to prison, die, just have all kinds of trouble, to I am leisurely smoking a joint in my city park with full permission. It just feels wonderful. Like, what a mental shift.
Now, just so listeners don't think that we're sitting up on top of a grassy knoll somewhere in full view of the world, we are in fact behind a privacy mesh. It's a fenced off area. There are security guards doing their thing. It's very much an adult area. It's, well, much like a beer garden, I suppose. As soon as this plane goes overhead, bloody seaplanes. I love seaplanes. Took that thing up to Victoria one time. It's beautiful. Yeah, they're so fun. But yeah, it is not much unlike a beer garden to that extent, where you've got, you know, the age control thing, except that they wouldn't have a privacy fence around a beer garden. That's a step. We just finished the beer fest. Not only would that not require it, of course kids can come into the beer fest. You just have to look to make sure they don't have the wristband. Only people with the right colored wristband on the correct wrist on that day get to be served. No one else does. Which, you know, kind of works, but
we're a little more tolerant of alcohol.
Quite a bit. Now, let's go back. You mentioned that this is not the very first time this sort of thing has been attempted. You actually did this about 6-8 months ago, right?
Yeah, everything is built upon steps that came before, right? All of our activism is a extension of things that came prior. So, you know, of course, like I said, there's people been smoking weed in Seattle Hemp Fest for years, but that was civil disobedience. And the question of, I had a question of where can you consume cannabis in this city? And so I was actually writing a column about this for The Stranger. And I asked a bunch of people this question, where can you consume cannabis in Seattle? People that I thought might know, might have an opinion, locals, people from different neighborhoods. And invariably, I got some version of the answer. Man, you can smoke weed anywhere. Like, go. They always said, go downtown to any corner. Like, seriously. Like, you'll smell it, I guarantee, right? And I said, well, that's not the answer that people are looking for. I've specifically had out-of-town guests at conferences and things like that ask me, like, where can I consume cannabis? And I've sort of said the same thing to them, and I feel like real jerk, right? Like, well, go down to the end of Pike Place Market. Like, everyone else is smoking weed down there. Like, I mean, that's not the answer they wanted, you know? And so after I asked everybody, not everybody, but after I asked a great number of people this question and got the same answer, I didn't have an answer. It felt really not good. I didn't like it. And so I approached the city about creating a place for people to consume cannabis legally. And specifically, I wanted to do it at the Seattle Center, which is a giant park. It's a city agency. It's basically a giant park. It's where the Space Needle is. We've got, you know, ice skating in the winter and theaters and all kinds of children's museums, stuff like that. And the year prior, when we legalized marijuana, when the law took effect, it was December 6, 2012, people spontaneously gathered underneath the Space Needle and consumed cannabis at midnight when the law took effect. And this was sort of the news story from Seattle. Oh, people are smoking weed under the Space Needle. Marijuana's legal, right? And I sort of wondered whether that was the best news story for us to put forth about what's happening here. Like, we just legalized cannabis, and so we're going to try to go out and civilly disobey the last vestiges of the law that we don't particularly agree with. How's that look, you know? And so I thought that the city, the Seattle Center, would be interested in just wrapping this event in privacy fabric. I thought that, hey, I think we can actually legalize this event in some fashion. We can reduce the harm that I personally see coming from it of, you know, let's just, pot's legal, let's smoke weed on the Broad Street lawn. You know, so wrap it in privacy fabric, I told them and suggested. And I would pay for it. I'll do this event. And so I called them and talked to the folks there, and they said, are you kidding me? Absolutely not. No way. No. Right? And I was like, well, but that's not the answer I'm looking for. That's not what I want to hear. And what's more, I happen to know that we have our city attorney here who's really supportive of marijuana. I happen to know that, you know, not only does he support marijuana legalization, I've talked to him about these sort of events, the idea of having places where people can consume cannabis, and that it should be okay. You know, there should be a way to do it. And granted, it's not necessarily immediately apparent to everybody, or it's not necessarily simple how to thread. We also have a law in Washington State that the voters enacted called the Clean Indoor Air Act, otherwise known as the indoor smoking ban. And so in Washington Place, in public places or places of employment, you cannot smoke. You cannot have any lighted material, which is the definition. And so you have to not only work within the bounds of the marijuana legalization law, which deals with public view and outlaws public view, but you have to work within the bounds of the Clean Indoor Air Act, which disallows smoking in public places as well as places of employment.
You mean outdoor public places as well as indoor? That's, I mean, understandable public buildings inside, but you mean, are you saying that technically people should not be indoor areas? So it's not that people can't smoke their cigarettes as they're walking along.
25 feet from all entrances and windows, technically. So, which it's, you know, We tolerate it more than necessarily, you know, not everyone's so strict on the law. You're not going to probably get ticketed being 20 feet next to a thing. But so you have to work within these bounds. It's not necessarily easy, but, and I understand that, and they could see that I understood that. And so the city had a conversation for a couple months about my request, as well as there was a couple other issues they were dealing with, including like hookah bars and pot lounge, like medical marijuana. There's a couple of medical marijuana dab bars. Eventually they said, okay. And they came back with a half page of new contract language that has not ever been in a city contract before for an outdoor cannabis consumption area. And I felt very, very proud for one. I was like, oh, great. You know, I answered the question of where can a tourist smoke weed in this town? I answered the question, and now I have to throw a party. It was basically like, oh man, I gotta do this or else. So I had to throw this party. It cost me an arm and a leg, but I won the argument. It was great. And now other people have been allowed to do that, because they've been able to do it a lot easier. It actually took me 3 months, and it really set me back, the whole battle with the city. I do have to say that once we got through that, once we got beyond our discord, they were very helpful and treated me just like any other customer, and were very just wonderful. And that was an amazing feeling to feel like, well, in my city, when I go to the parks department, when I go to the city to request a permit for a park or a event, just like anybody else, I can openly discuss with them and openly get a permit for cannabis consumption, just like I could for alcohol consumption on a thing, on an event. And that feels really good. I mean, that was a small battle, but it's a cultural phenomenon that doesn't really exist in too many places. So I feel pretty comfortable sitting in this. What's more, at this event, I had to have double fencing. They called it a marijuana moat. I had to have an 8-foot moat Which doubles your cost on fencing, and I had a lot of fencing. They made me fence and screen off the monorail station, the entire station, so that when people are cruising into the monorail station, they couldn't potentially catch a glimpse of any cannabis. And I actually had to, my event didn't start on time. Like, it was kind of postponed like 15 minutes or 10 minutes because we didn't have enough privacy fabric up, they determined. It just was all this, like, I mean, it was a lot of work. Right, to like get it the first time, but here there's just a single fence. It seems pretty chill. Nobody seems to mind. There's, you know, police outside, like in the festival. Like, nobody seems to. It's a great environment. Like, we're tolerated.
It's really effective too. I mean, I'm looking back at this stuff, and when I was on the outside looking in, maybe it was just that I wasn't looking closely enough, or maybe it is the way that they have this fencing. I wasn't able to see inside. I mean, I can see a little bit out. I presume that's a trick of the material, right? Sort of a scrim-like effect?
I don't know what the technology is, actually, Doug. Maybe it's hemp. I think maybe also we just don't notice because there's so many darn fences around here. The whole thing's fenced off from the railroad tracks. Nice thing is there's water on one side of us. So through that scrim, you can actually see people smoking weed down on the rocks and in benches, not in the area, in the smoking area. And that's civil disobedience, and that's actually tolerated as well.
See, I've seen
the... comfortable for me, though, to be in this little area. Like, I really enjoy it. It's like my little Amsterdam in the middle of Seattle, you know? Like, what a wonderful experience, especially if you're a tourist. Like, imagine you come here. There's three cruise ships cruise in this morning, and they'll cruise out. They probably already have. They cruise out every day. They'll cruise in tomorrow, and they'll cruise in Sunday. At least three each, filled with a lot of people, a lot of tourists, right, coming here. And they run into Hempfest. They're, like, literally down at the end of this park is where they land. They cruise into Hempfest, right? And they come into this little Amsterdam in the middle of Seattle that has a permit, like, that the city tolerates, not only tolerates, but permits. Like, what a world, what an environment. And what's more, it seems fine. Like, nobody seems to mind. There's not, like, you know, people stumbling around. There's not, like, you know, crime or whatever, you know, there's...
This is a conversation with Ben Livingston, recorded August 2013 in Seattle, Washington at Seattle Hemp Fest, previously unaired. We'll hear the rest in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
So I just love it. I love it. And I'm so proud of Washington for being one of the first states to legalize weed. That's awesome. I live in California, and I can't wait. I can't wait till we legalize weed because I would like to open a bud and breakfast. Right? Would you come see me at the Wake and Bacon?
Yeah.
Would you visit me?
Yeah.
Right? Good morning. Good afternoon, really, because we're not going to get up that early. You understand? Matter of fact, I'm going to put a chocolate on your pillow. It's going to knock you out. You're going to wake up refreshed, wander into the kitchen. Hey, you're just in time for lunch. Who doesn't want to have lunch? Right? Perfect.
Now let's hear the rest of that conversation with Ben Livingston.
My friend and I volunteered at a beer fest in Portland a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, the crowd here is much quieter, much more peaceful, much more mellow, and a lot. They don't strike you as being messed up on anything. At the beer fest,
it's harder to spill, like, people spilling their beer on you. It's like harder to spill your marijuana on someone, right? It's like, ah, oh, you got bud on me. Oh, like, oh, bummer, dude. Catch a bud, you know, like, you know, versus getting beer dimped on you, you know, like, you at the sports game, some guy, like, trips over, like, some drunk with four beers, you know, like, man, yeah, please trip over me and drop a joint, you know, like, gosh, worst things have fallen from the sky, you know.
And it's the other thing, the beer fest experience, open air park, sure, they had a fence around it, but the entry, they just checked if you were old enough. If you were, you got a wrist tag. If you weren't, oh, sure, you can still come in and look at all the wonderful adults drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. And some of these specimens were, oh, my heaven, not really the kind of folks you'd want to grow up into, you know. And It's an interesting collection of humanity in this place, I'll grant you that. But, again, you're not getting that sort of, you're not getting that sort of, we did the trash detail at the place, and working trash and recycling at a beer fest so that you're sober, and watching all these people trying to figure out how to throw their food away in the compost and the rest. Oh, dear heaven, that was, yeah, this is a totally different, I mean, this is just like, okay, so no marijuana moat. The are there other differences between the way they have this and versus the...
Well, I think it's just generally a little more lax and low-key. Like, there's another one of these marijuana consumption areas down in the main stage area, which is underneath one of the main entrances is a pedestrian bridge that comes into the park that's about 3 years old now. It's really quite awesome. But they stuck this marijuana consumption area basically right kind of underneath that. And there's tents that kind of allow you to block off the visuals for the most part. But, you know, odds are at some point somebody maybe on one of them bridges is going to see somebody consume cannabis in that area, right? And I think that the answer to that, at least in this case, has been like, well, I mean, honestly, whatever. Like, it's fine. It's not the end of the world, you know. In my case, at the Seattle Center, the very first time I did it, it was very much, we were like, no, it will be the end of the world. It was sort of like I had to prove to them, like, and it was like minute by minute, like that whole event, I was like interfacing with those, my rep and just like making sure everything's going kosher. You know, here it just seems to be pretty much like, oh, it's cool. Everything's going to be fine. There's medics nearby if there's a problem. There's peer security. Everyone's cool. It's fine. I'm surprised at how many people have hash oil for this. These devices over here, these hash oil machines. There's like, how many would you say? Six or eight? Like eight.
I think eight, yeah.
They're like eight electronic nails, e-nails as they call them. They're hooked up to little heating boxes, which control the temperature, which they're generally running between 700 and 800 degrees, I notice. To burn this hash oil, and you're supposed to bring your own, and there's a lot of people who have hash oil. Yo, Owl.
Okay, so the folks who are I know I see folks on both sides, and some of the folks on the one side of the tent all have the same I Heart Bud shirts. Now, so are they helping? Are they basically showing people how to use the nail? What the heck is going on over here? I haven't been paying attention to this at all, and now I'm kind of curious.
So this is a cafe in town, a medical marijuana place that allows you to come in and consume cannabis at their cafe, and they also, I think, sell food and things like that. And so they have a dab bar. It's a dab bar, basically. They staff a dab bar. And so what they're doing is making sure you don't break their stuff. So they're making sure that you're not like, you know, they're staffing the accoutrement, the paraphernalia.
The dab bar is sort of is the hash oil bar and the concentrates. And so the gear is not something people aren't bringing in their own dab equipment. This is supplied.
Plugged in. They're electronic nails, electronic bowls, I guess you'd call them, and you grab a little bit of oil on a little stick, and you touch it on there, and it goes through just like a water pipe, a water bubbler, or a bong, and the bowl is electrified, so it's heated up. So that's the whole idea, and they're not cheap. They're pretty sought after devices, and they're mainly, also not everybody knows how to use them, so they're helping people learn how to use them. I actually learned a lot when I was over there talking to the fella, and he was helping me out and telling me what I was doing right and what I was doing wrong. When I consumed, like I told you earlier, more hash oil than I think I have consumed in the entirety of the last year, in about 5 minutes over at the hash oil bar. Yeah. So you're supposed to bring your own. I did not, and they would not provide me any. They were clear about that they would not provide me any. So I had to look around a handful of directions and find somebody who would gift me hash oil, which, not surprisingly, in this little Amsterdam in the center of Seattle during Hempfest weekend was not difficult to find. So somebody gifted me hash oil, and then other people gifted me hash oil. And somebody had some over 90% THC extract orange flaky oil. And I said, why would I want to smoke that? Why would I want over 90% THC? And he said, I don't know, right? Why? I don't know if I would. And then he proceeded to pick some up, and he was like, well, do you want some? I was like, sure. Why not? Let's see what it does. So yeah, all kinds of amazing things happening here. It must be, like I said earlier, it must be very surprising, and it must be a mental shift if you're coming here from a cruise boat down the road and you're from someplace out of town and you roll into Hempfest and you come across this, not only this event in general, which is just amazing and out of, you know, you can't really imagine it if you haven't been there, but then to come, if you come through this specific area and to just see that, well, they allow this in Seattle. You can get a permit for this in Seattle. Like, it's like it's not even a thing. Nobody minds. Nobody cares. That's kind of how it should be, right? That's the aim. That's the goal.
I say brewfests are, I think, a lot more, I think, almost should be more controversial. They're certainly a lot more acceptable, but they're a lot more exposed. It's amazing. Okay, yeah, Portland.
It's on the general election in Oregon.
Yeah, we'll be voting in November. Well, it's an all vote by mail thing. So at the sometime in early October, they send out the ballots, and for a month, we have a time to look at everything, the different. And there's a governor's race as well as a Senate race this year. So they're hoping that there will be some interest. Oh, the exciting governor's race! It's just sad, but the ballot measure 91, and it's they called it New Approach Oregon, but they allow limited home cultivation. They didn't do the Dewey thing, the per se law thing. They're a handful. Well. They allow home cultivation, but it's 4 plants per household, so it's not exactly. It's something. Well, yeah,
it's more than we got. I'm an advocate for home growing. I think that we need to allow people to freely produce their own cannabis, like it's a botanical flower that it is, like it's a garden vegetable, you know.
Well, I was talking to Keith. I mean, how on earth are you going to try and even enforce that? Are you gonna search my bedroom closet? You know, because that's what you're gonna have to do to find out. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous.
That was a conversation with Ben Livingston, recorded at the Seattle Hemp Fest in August 2013. Previously unaired audio from the world's largest protestival. Hemp Fest did not take place this year. It's hard to say if it will ever happen again, but it definitely lives on in the hearts and minds of weed activists around the world. And well, for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying
for
so
the
long.
Drug Truth
so
Network, long. This is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.